Technology all summer. Okay? There's going to be a ladies study. Emily, what's the name of it? All Things New, I think. And that's 8 weeks. And there's also going to be a study on marriage. I don't know the name of it yet. These are each going to be run one time, meaning they're not going to be running like this. They're going to run like this. So the ladies can go to the ladies. When they're done, they can come down here, or they can go to the marriage one with their husbands. We're not going to do any competition. And that's what we're going to do this summer. Tim and I are going to teach on eschatology. If you don't know what eschatology is, ask him, because I don't know. And that's what we're going to deal with, okay? I'm going to start now because I think eschatology, we have a lot to talk about. And I told you I was going to begin early, but I told you in May, but I didn't tell you. I just decided to do it this week. Is this the first week of May or second week? See, I don't know. I don't even know where I'm at. All right. Any questions on this, by the way? Questions? Makes sense. So if you want to learn about eschatology, this will be the place. There will be nobody sleeping through the same videos that Walt shows twice, like last year, because ours will be a consecutive series. It won't be repetition. If you want to get what we teach, you'll have to listen to it online if you're in one of the classes. All right? 1 Corinthians 15. Let's read together. I think we can remain seated for right now. Moreover, brethren, I declare unto you the what? What is the gospel? Well, I mean, you know, euangelion, the good news. By the way, fundamental to the good news is a story. And you have to consider the gospel is some kind of a story that makes sense. Otherwise, there's like a beginning. There's like some different things that happen along the way. There's a crisis, kind of a big crisis called the fall. There's this thing in the middle that starts to bring resolution called the cross. And ultimately, things are going to be wrapped up. It's a story. And without that story, you're bumbled along with Joel Osteen. I can't imagine preaching a series of sermons, and I've heard him preach 20 times. He says the same thing every sermon. He uses the story of Abraham. He uses the story of Joseph. He talked about Joseph's destiny. Look at me in the eyes. Joseph didn't have a destiny. He never talked about himself. He says, you meant evil against me, but God meant it for good. For what purpose? To save many people alive. It wasn't about Joseph, but people that don't know the Bible, everything's about me. God's here to make you wealthy and give you your best life. Yeah. The gospel is a story. It's good news. He says, which I preached unto you, which also you have received and wherein you stand, by which also you are saved. If you keep in memory what I preached unto you, unless you have believed in vain. Then he starts to kind of give flesh to what some of this is. And I teach this in basic Bible doctrine, of course, give several different principles on what the gospel is. I'm not really going to talk about the gospel. We're going to talk about eschatology because one of the pieces is eschatology. You really can't even understand Christianity until you know there's something at the end. It's going someplace. Paul says, for I delivered unto you first of all that which I also received, how that Christ died for our sins according to the Scriptures, and that he was buried, and that he rose again the third day according to the Scriptures, and that he was seen of, the King James says, Cephas. Cephas is what it is. It's an Aramaic word. Then of the 12, by the way, Peter is the more or less equivalent in Greek, more or less. And verse 6, after that he was seen of above 500 brethren at once, of whom the greater part remain unto this present, but some are fallen asleep. Verse 11, you can read the interim verses. They're interesting. They're helpful. Verse 11 is the most important verse for you this morning. If you do not understand this verse, your mind is going to be open to some of the stupidest ideas. Dave, I'll speak directly to you. You have come across elements of this stupidity, multiple gospels. So let's eliminate multiple gospels right now. Got it? There has only ever been one gospel. Period. Paul tells us. So you actually need to get this verse in your soul. This is not Pastor Warren's opinion. This is what Paul states. Therefore, whether it were who? Who's the I? Thank you. Or what they is he talking about? Who has he just been talking about? The other apostles. So whether it's Paul or Peter or James or John, guess what gospel they preach? Therefore, whether it were I or they, so, and then he uses the word what? So you have the I, that's Paul. You have the they, that's James, John, Peter, etc., etc. And then he summarizes them in the next word by saying, so we, you know, we all of us, what do we do? And so ye believed. By the way, folks, one verse eliminates all foolishness. You cannot go to Galatians and say, well, Paul talked about a gospel, and they act like it's a different kind of gospel to the circumcision and a different kind of gospel to the Gentiles. No, those are different spheres of ministry. That's all they are. Because here he's very clear, we all preach the same thing. By the way, you already know this. When you read the New Testament, if you actually read it, you'll find that Peter and Paul went to the same places. So they couldn't have been preaching two different ways of salvation. It's just retarded, but we'll move on to verse 12. Now, if Christ be preached that he rose from the dead, how say some among you that there is no resurrection of the dead? Now, from here on, he's going to do the only place in the New Testament where he is so rational and logical to eliminate stupid ideas. I'm not going to go down that road this morning. What I want to do is just introduce this concept of eschatological essentials. We'll begin with the first concept. This is no big deal. When you're young, you're so impressed with big words. Hello? It's very impressive the first time you hear about pneumatology. Ooh. Folks, when I was in the laboratory, we had all the same kind of language, came right out of Greek too. If I put this word on the board, let's see how many of you know this word. Anybody know this word? Leukos? Leukos? Well, there's actually two words that sound the same. This one here means wolf. This one means white. Oh, that's... So, do you know that your blood has leukocytes? Ooh. Or you could say, do you know your blood has white blood cells? And of course, you still don't know anything either direction unless you know what you're talking about. So I'm going to use the word, but I'm not nearly as impressed with impressing you as some of you think you're impressive. I said a lot of impressive words there. What's eschatology mean? Well, the word eschatos, the word you see in your notes, simply means last. Boy, that's really heavy, isn't it? It is the Greek word. It is the Greek word for this, folks, last. Or you could say last things. And anytime you put the little word ology on there, like theology, Christology, pneumatology, that means what? Are you all right, Nancy? Are you allergic to the... What did you say mean? You are so bad. I came back and you have allergies. Okay. I got you. So, eschatology, what is it? Study of last things. That's all it is. But we're not going to study last things today in the sense of anything you're interested in. Because everybody wants to know, when's Jesus coming? Is he coming back today? And I'm sure some of you have read the books and man... Did you know? Oh, I got over that in the 70s. The first time I read Hal Lindsey's book, I was over all eschatological speculation. It had the opposite effect on me that it was supposed to have. And some of you are saying, Hal who? Watch Jack Van Impe. Is he still talking that nonsense? Jesus is coming. Did you know the Trilateral Commission and the European Union? And it's like, oh, give me a headache. Eschatological essentials. I asked a question, essentials, what are they? So what is the core? What are the essentials? Now, friend, here's something that's important. When you ask the question, please look up here. When you ask the question, what are the essentials? You need to ask a second question, which would be? Essentials to what? Thank you. Start to think, because we're talking about what's essential to the gospel this morning. Now, we're a Baptist church. We're dispensational. We're premillennial. We're pre-tribulational. What's essential to being a member of this church is going to be a whole lot more than what we're going to talk about. But to even be saved, you have to understand to some degree some basic ideas about last things, okay? So we're talking about what's essential to the gospel. It's not all that we believe. We'll talk about more what we believe in the future. That's all we're going to discuss this week and probably next. Essential to being saved, essential to the gospel, essential to the gospel story. What are they? Well, here they are. And I could also do this. Well, why don't I do this before I begin? You know, we do this little thing with a creation. This is kind of the gospel story. Curse. You've probably heard of those. Otherwise, if you're going to tell a story, you got to kind of have some basic elements here. Down here in the middle, there's this thing called the cross, and somewhere, we don't know when, and we believe in a lot of other things. Christ is going to come, other things are going to happen, but we're going to have the consummation. So you have four elements. The cross, you know, creation. Is creation important? Not according to professors at Wheaton. One of their biggest historical professors, a guy named Walton. By the way, I'm not making this up. He's now written three or four books. He tells you, you know all that stuff you think you understand? You don't understand any of it. I as a scholar need to tell you that he's not really talking about history. Walter, I read that Walton idiot, and I'm using the term directly. He sounds just like the liberals of the 1800s and early 1900s. He used the same language, teaching at Wheaton. There's only one element that you're missing. There's two elements you're missing. Are we all right? The thing that we often miss is the line. Because the line means we also have a view of history. You know, history started and history is going to. It's called a teleological view of history. And there's one other element that I'm going to teach my Bible kids starting Wednesday. And I have quit using the simplistic chart because this can be used for all the covenantalists and it leaves Israel out of the picture. By the way, Christianity has a very Israel-centered view of things. So I think there's all of these promises that God makes. And it doesn't start here. It starts in eternity past, but it comes to fruition in Abraham. And there's a whole storyline, and I'm not going to discuss that right now, but you have to understand, if you extricate Israel from this, you can still tell the story, but you don't tell the story of the Bible because the story of the Bible is Jewish. All right, number one, the first essential, and this would be kind of obvious, would be the immortality of the soul. And I think you probably have to believe this, or why would be the point of being a Christian? Meaning, I think it was Bob Jones Sr. said as a young man, he says, it came across me, and I haven't read this in 20 years. Something to the effect, I realized I had to live somewhere forever. And that's the concept of whoever the you is going to be someplace forever. The immortality of the soul. I'm not going to explain what the soul is. Some of you are much smarter than me, I'm sure. I'm going to go with this. The soul is simply the person or the individual or the essence of me, who I am. Now, soul can be used in different ways in the Bible, and it is. Nephesh is oftentimes just used for one's life. Suke is used the same in the New Testament. But basically, when we talk about the immortality of the soul, please look at me. This is what's essential. I want to ask you a question. Do you believe, not you in your belly button, but do you believe the person sitting next to you on a plane is going to live someplace forever? Changes everything about you, your self-centeredness, your belly button, because all of a sudden you realize there's something in this world bigger than, if I'm going to live someplace forever, so is everybody else. And, you know, a lot of this becomes, it becomes pregnant with other ideas. Don't have to go there. So for us today, basically is this. To be a Christian, you have to have some idea that you're going to last longer than when your dog dies and the eyes close. Is that all that we are? By the way, a lot of people say yes. Just that's it. The second absolute essential for Christianity of eschatology is the resurrection of the body. Now, by the way, folks, 1 Corinthians 15 is filled with this. That's its main emphasis. So if you look at this idea, immortality of the soul, we could also use for soul the immaterial part of us. Otherwise, we believe that at minimum that man and women have two parts. There's an immaterial part, and there's a material part. The material part is what? And we believe what's going to happen to the body? Yes. These are pretty fundamental to Christianity. So this would be the material part. Now, so you know forever, and some Christians in this room are probably very interested in knowing, do we have three parts or two parts? And I am exactly zero interested in that. I'm actually less than zero. I'll tell you the truth. I could prove to you right now from Bible text that you have six or seven immaterial parts. But actually, this is what we are. We're a body, and then there's the me. And even right now, if you think about it, you can separate your mind and who you are from your body. You look at me. You can look at you. You have to think about that for a while. There is something about this that can look at this. But these are fundamental. This is going to last forever. The body is going to be resurrected. So let's read some verses, if we could. If you have questions, I'm all open for questions. I will chase no rabbits. So if you think that the center of Christianity is being a trichotomist, I'm not that guy. Walter. Oh, Walter, I'm sleepy. Come on. Yes, you're right. Thank you, Walter. Cross, thank you. And I was obviously not translating it well. Thank you, brother. Yes, those are your big ideas. Your big ideas are creation, curse, cross, consummation, a view of history, and then there's this story that puts it all together, and the story is the story of Jesus. Where did he come from? He's not Irish. I'll talk about that this morning in church. Because, you know, when you go to the Philippines, in Pampanga, where Jenny Lynn is from, they have another big cult up there. It's like the cults just keep growing in that country. And all of these people look at themselves and think they're the Messiah. Daniel 12. And at that time, Michael shall stand up. The great prince which standeth for the children of the people. And there shall be a time of trouble. I think this is called the great tribulation. Such as never was since there was a nation, even to that same time. And at that time, Thy people shall be delivered, every one that shall be found written in the book. And many of them that sleep in the dust of the earth shall awake, some to everlasting life, and some to shame and everlasting contempt. And not only that, and they that are wise, be wise shall shine as the brightness of the firmament, and they that turn many to righteousness as the stars forever and ever. I mean, not only do you have resurrection, but you have some kind of element of rewards. Jesus says in John 5:24, marvel not at this, for the hour is coming in which all that are in the grave shall hear his voice, and shall come forth, they that have done good unto the resurrection of life, and they that have done evil unto the resurrection of damnation or condemnation. John 11, Jesus saith unto her, thy brother shall rise again. Martha saith unto him, well, I know that he shall rise again in the resurrection at the last day. Jesus saith unto her, I am the resurrection and the life. He that believeth in me, though he were dead, yet shall he live. And whosoever liveth and believeth in me shall never die. I think this is referring back to this first part. You know, that which we are is never going to die. I mean, the body is obviously going to decompose on the whole. Acts 17. For as much then as we are the offspring of God, we ought not to think of the Godhead as likened to gold or silver. Paul is using some logic here, which modern Christians don't deal well with logic. He's looking at pagans and saying, you guys worship gold idols and silver idols. Well, if we somehow come from God, how would we be in basically, we cannot come from gold, you know, inanimate objects. That doesn't, you know, there's a disconnect here. He's using a little logic, trying to get us to think. Or graven by art and man's device. He goes on to say, and at the times of this ignorance God winked at, but now commandeth all men everywhere to repent, because he hath appointed a day in the which he will judge the world in righteousness by that man, Jesus, whom he hath ordained. Wherefore he hath given assurance unto all men in that he hath raised him from the dead. And when they heard of the resurrection of the dead, some, and my guess is most, mocked. Others? Well, we need to hear more about this. We will hear thee again of this matter. So Paul departed from among them, howbeit certain men clave unto him and believed, among the which was Dionysius, the Areopagite, and a woman named Damaris, and others with them. So, most religions teach some kind of immortality. And my guess is we won't go much farther than this. There's only one thing that teaches nothing. And who is the scientist that just died? What's the guy? Hawkins. Stephen Hawking? Was it Hawking singular? I did read his little book, A Brief History of Time. He was a brilliant person. But, I mean, he's one of like many that believes basically, you know, you're pretty insignificant. When the eyes close, that's it. That's atheism, friend. You're probably not going to meet a lot of atheists in the world. But I'll give you a basic idea of what atheists believe. And I leave out something here that I should have in here. I should put the word death in here. And the word death is not in here, but it needs to be in here. According to atheism, death is the extinction of you. The lights are gone. There is no more you. You are toast. Now let me ask you a question. Would very many people really believe this? What do you think? You think so? What about America? What do you think, Dave? Do you think there's atheism, or would you think that be the lighter version called agnosticism? See, agnosticism would basically be in the same place, with this exception. Atheism says, I know. When you die, that's it. Agnosticism says, I don't know. Probably, but I'm not sure. I would think most people would be more, and maybe in the final results, the same thing. Well, sometimes there's moral reasons. Who was Christopher? What, Walter? He had moral reasons for not believing in God. Very deeply held moral reasons. His basically womanizing and drunkenness. I mean, he just didn't care. That was his life. Well, let me give you the rest of this. But basically, atheism teaches this. Death is the extinction of you. And this is very important. Look up the board, please. Let me do this. So everybody can see. We believe two basic things. The immortality of what? Do not get caught up in the word soul. The concept is there's an immaterial part of you that lasts forever. Got it? There is a physical part of you that's going to die and decompose, probably. But we believe in the future that those are going to come together. There's going to be a resurrection and a unity again. Here's the problem. Atheism does not see this distinction. See, they see the body and the soul as the same. So when the body dies, whatever you are dies with it. That's what they believe. And agnosticism would probably believe something similar, but they'd say, well, maybe, maybe not, I don't know. Basically, it's a way of saying, leave me alone, I want to get back to my drinking. Or whatever else I'm doing. So, atheism teaches this. No distinction between the body and the soul. When the body dies, you end. Now, in the past, in America, Dave, as you know, you're bringing it up, in the past, Americans in general could never be atheists. It was very rare to find an atheist. I do believe we have moved more and more that direction. Now, I believe we've moved more and more that direction because Christianity has a soft underbelly. You know, the old bombers that flew, they were great if you were fighting them, but they had one weakness, the bottom. Christianity has proven we have one weakness. I read an Episcopalian that in the 1960s said, he said, we have lost the battle for Christianity in America in the 60s. And it was over the issue of this. My sex life is more important than anything else on earth. And now that sex life has just gotten weirder and weirder. And don't kid yourself, that goes for church too. When I heard Brother Joel speaking this morning, Brother Joel was talking about destiny, and he was using code language. If someone has left you, don't worry about them. It was just God bringing them through your life. He's basically doing this, putting his imprimatur on divorce, remarriage, whatever's going on in your world, because the most important thing in the world is your belly button. Once you have that, Dave, then after a while, that's the center of our life. Somebody had a question or comment. Yes, sir. Yeah, I have never spent any energy talking about Thor or Loki and Odin. And by the way, folks, if you're from Northern Europe, your descendants worshipped one form of Odin. Odin, Woden, Woden. He had eight names that all sounded the same. Whether you were from England, Germany, the Dutch area, Scandinavia. And you don't hear anybody saying, here's the 400 reasons I don't believe in Woden. It's like, who cares? Yeah, you're right. Well, we have now pantheism. And the next couple, I believe, are not necessarily mutually exclusive. Pantheism says the soul is immortal. Of course, then you have to ask what exactly you're talking about, and they get real fuzzy. But it will eventually become part of God. And by the way, there are variations on this. Some says it's already part of God. Let's see how many old geezers are here. Mike's not here. French, you wouldn't know, but this Mike might know. The day John Lennon died and was killed, They did his funeral a few days later, and his son said something very powerful. I don't know if you remember it. I caught it. When did he die? 1980s? Probably. How would you know? Are you that old? John Lennon. Really? John Lennon's son said this. Now John Lennon has become part of God. That's pantheism. Basically, God. Now there's different forms. Pastor Warren is not trying to give you a detailed list of the forms of pantheism. Get a life. You're going to have a lot of pantheism in America, but very rarely is it going to be intelligent pantheism, like you would get if you went to Thailand, Japan, Cambodia. You're going to run into some real intelligent people with Buddhism in other countries too. But I think of those three because I know for sure in Vietnam. Yes? Mm-hmm. So pantheism basically says the soul is immortal but will eventually become part of God. And here's the kicker. And become what? So whatever you're... So here's you. Here is Tim. Here is Louie. You're immortal. You'll last forever. But you won't last forever. Not the you. Because 10 million years from now, there won't be a you. You'll be part of this big... Yes, you lose your identity. You're undifferentiated. You're nothing. And this is what Buddhism teaches. Hinduism is worse than Buddhism because there's so many forms. But some forms of Hinduism would also say you basically lose the you. You just get lost. Okay? Let's see what else I have here. So basically, you get lost in God with a little g. How about reincarnation? But reincarnation tends to be part of these same religions. And it's amazing how many people in Hollywood are part of all this stuff. People that, you know, our kids worship. I wish some of you actually had enough character to stop thinking about yourself and listen to young people. You ought to ask, you know, just sit around and listen to teenagers talk about who they like, what's important to them. Ooh, reincarnation. This has this concept of lower and higher, eventually finding some sort of bliss. You know, you might start out as, of course, the weird thing about it is most of these things are not the way we would think. Because Americans tend to think if there's, you know, we tend to think in an evolutionary fashion, man being at the top of the heap. But this is not necessarily evolutionary in the way we think because they think cows are more important than humans. So, you know, you might have started as a human, but humans are down here, are in the middle. Then you elevate to a bug. Then you elevate sometime to a epus. Is that how you spell it, epus? You're now a cockroach. You have moved up in the world. And finally, you move up all the way here, and you get up here, and finally, it's bliss. But what is the bliss? Again, goes right back to pantheism. You kind of become undifferentiated. You lose you. By the way, you lose the you. I'll come right to you, Sam. Please look at me. You better be careful, because there are forms of Christianity that sound a great deal like this, where you really use... Here's the beauty of Christianity. 10 million years from now, I'll still be able to look at Phil, and Phil will still be by Mary. He'll still have that dumb look on his face. See, look at that look. He'll still have that smile, because Phil, 10 million years from now, will still be Phil. He'll be a better Phil. I'll be a better me. I hope. But do you realize, when it comes to real belief, not many beliefs believe that. So you got to be careful when people say, yeah, I believe in God. What do you mean by that? Sam, did you have a comment? What are the bottom ones, though? Do you know? No, there's one lower than a dog. I know what it is. Hold on. Is that not correct? A street dog. That's lower than a dog. Is that spelled correctly? Or do they drop the O off too? It's Cardinal Witch Filipino group has the C and doesn't have the C. Don't mess with me about C's. All I know is I learned the word street dog in the Philippines. That's the lowest form. Yeah, it is about karma. And what about this? Is there within what you know of Hinduism? Because Hinduism is so big and it's amorphous. It's always changing. Do they also believe in fate, like kismet? So some things are fated? Okay, because Islam has a lot of the fate side of things. You know, you're just what you are is what you are. Okay? All right. So how do you say it? Do you say?
Askal.
Thank you. And then you also have Buskal. We better move on. We're going to get in trouble. How about the Greeks on the next page? Now, folks, when I talk about the Greeks, I'm not talking about modern Greece. I'm talking about the Greeks of Paul's day. And this is Pastor Warren's opinion. The more I reflected on this, the more I believe this is what America is, including people that go to church. I really have come to the conclusion that most people believe about what the Greeks did. They probably wouldn't be quite as technical, but when the smoke clears, this is what I normally hear from Christians. We're going to a better place. And if the person plays basketball, he's there playing basketball with Jesus. If he drinks, he's there drinking with Jesus. If he plays baseball, he's playing baseball with Jesus. It's not really an idea of Christianity. It's really pretty much, you make it up. Here's the Greeks. And that's the reason I put the plus, plus, plus. I don't think it's just the ancient Greeks believed this. They believed, and by the way, we find this in 1 Corinthians, excuse me, Acts 17. They believe in the immortality of the soul, but it's in a shadowy place. It's a better place. It's up there. Whereas in the New Testament, most of the time when people talked about dying, they talked about being with the Lord, being gathered unto your people. They're talking about a real place. This is kind of, yeah, there's a place. He's in a better place. I have no idea exactly where Catholicism got purgatory from, other than any kind of a legalistic religion who teaches work salvation. Unless you're an idiot, you realize you cannot do enough good works in this life to get there. So because it's legalism and you're roped into the Catholic Church, purgatory works really well because then you can go to purgatory and Walter can start paying for you to get out of purgatory. So it just goes, the system is very intact. Very intact in a Roman Catholic system. But see, you're also asking this question. What does the typical Catholic believe as opposed to what the Catholic Church teaches? Those are not the same. Walter. Jesus paid it, most of it. Yeah. Who did that? It's the cross. Preach it, brother. Preach it. Whoa. Good stuff. But brother, the whole system is bound up in its works, and it's locked you into the guilt and the system of Catholicism. It has a very distinct reason for this. Now, so all of you can get equally mad at me. There's a big element of our group. Now, you don't ever think like I do because I'm weird, but I'm in Bible college. I won't say which one, but everybody knows. I'm in Bible college one day, and for the 400th time, I've heard a sermon from this platform about getting right with God. And, you know, you start reading the Bible, you know, that Hebrews book? And I, right in the middle of chapel, his sermon had the opposite effect on me. It's like, well, if what Jesus did doesn't get me right with God, do you think something I can do will get me right with God? It's Christ or it's nothing, folks. So we have these altar calls so you can get right. What does that mean? Here's what it means. It's the Baptist. Have you ever noticed we don't do that? No, you haven't, because you're paying attention to other things. Some of you don't even know why we don't do that. Because I actually believe in the finished work of Christ. And I believe if what Jesus did for you doesn't motivate you, nothing else really will motivate you. That relationship with Christ and what he has done for us is the driving factor of life. Anything else is something foreign to Christianity. Brother Mike, did you have a question or comment? Go ahead. It's sad for you to say that, and I will say this. I don't think everybody within Catholicism, even the leaders, are that cynical, but I do believe there is a piece of this, and some of those popes, come on, folks, the Pope, when Luther broke with Catholicism, he actually he believed the Pope was being misrepresented until he went to Rome and found out, nope, it was an elaborate fundraiser, and the fundraiser was pretty good. You want to go out and sin? No problem. Pay some money. I can even preemptively forgive you what you're going to do, so long as you're putting money in the coffer. Pretty straightforward, Phil. It's not quite as blatant, though, as it was in the 1500s. Yes. Yes, sir.
I think John MacArthur mentioned that I think Roman Catholics made purgatory as a safety net for people. And I've seen this because I've been Roman Catholic for 60 years. I mean, this you folks, again, lighting the candles, you pay the priest, and you have masses. I've seen folks actually kneeling from the entrance of the church, I don't call it, YouTube, whatever, kneeling and all the way down to the altar.
Yes, but there's something very offsetting, if I may say, never having been a Catholic, never having grown up around Catholics. There were so few Catholics in my family, and I come from a huge family. I know I have an uncle, but he's not a Catholic, but his wife kind of is, Kenny and Rose. Some of the children aren't. They go to Baptist churches. And then I have some on Dad's side. I mean, it's very rare in my family. So I don't come from that background, but let me just say this. I sometimes watch the devotion. It's normally of older people, usually women. And I watch those people, and it embarrasses me, though. They're very serious about this. Very serious about doing these things. Every morning. I know people, every morning they're at Mass. And they're doing it as part of their way of getting saved. Amy? They also used to have a place, but they changed their mind recently on limbo, Walter, from my understanding. They had a place called Limbo, which was kind of, they didn't know what was going to happen. But since they changed their mind, I guess it went away. it disappeared. Yes. Yeah, but I'm telling you, when you see, and you'll see this among Polish, see, some of us in this room have never been around dead, serious Catholics. Because Catholics in America, most of them are worthless. But when you get around certain groups like Polish, where nationality and religion come together, Ireland, I would say a lot, not Filipino males usually, but the women, wow. Usually older, they're starting to get serious about eternity. And they're doing things that we don't do. Well, we need to finish this little section up. Give me 1 minute. We'll pick up here next week. The Greeks believe in the immortality of the soul in a shadowy place. This is the technical part that modern people wouldn't believe in. The body is the prison house of the soul. So when the Greeks listened to you and me talking about the resurrection, they're like, the last thing I want is this body. Because they didn't understand, we weren't talking about this body. We're talking about a glorified body. So when I see my loved ones and people that I've loved in this church that are already with the Lord, Sam's not going to have a body with cancer. But they didn't get the point. So they were thinking, I want to get out of this body because this body dies, gets old. Yes? Let me ask you a question. Some of you don't have this problem. Why is it easier to gain weight than lose it? Our bodies die, don't they? They get old. I read a joke, and I'm gonna conclude this morning with a joke. I don't like the joke. The joke goes like this. I always thought it was the dryer that shrank my clothing. I found out it was the refrigerator. All right. Let's pray, please. Father, thank you for this day. Bless our time. In Christ's name, amen.